This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Rebecca Roberts in Washington. Neil Conan is away. Pro football fans from coast to coast, take a look at your woolly Green Bay Packers winter hat or your shady San Diego Chargers visor. Unless you bought it before 2001, it's made by Reebok. That's the year the National Football League gave Reebok the exclusive license to sell headgear with NFL team logos. Before that decision, other companies sold NFL hats too, companies like American Needle, which is now taking the NFL to court for possible violation of antitrust laws. The Supreme Court hears opening arguments today. But this isn't just about hats. This case could eventually determine whether the league should be considered one entity or 32 separate businesses. And that decision could affect player salaries, gear, even ticket prices in football and other professional sports. What do you think? Should the NFL be treated as one company or 32 separate businesses? Give us a call. Our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. Our email address is talk@npr.org, and you can join the conversation at our website. Go to npr.org and click on Talk of the Nation. Joining us now in Studio 3A is David Savage. He covers the Supreme Court for the Los Angeles Times and the Chicago Tribune. Welcome to the program.
Hi, Rebecca.
Give us a quick update on what happened in court today.
Well, the court heard an hour's worth of argument on the issue. The NFL, as you said, is arguing that it's a single entity and therefore is sort of immune from the antitrust laws. American Needle, the little hat maker in the Chicago area, says this deal, this exclusive marketing deal, costs consumers a lot of money and we should be able to sue on antitrust grounds. Justices seemed they didn't like either argument too much. I think they're sort of skeptical of the NFL's claim that it's totally shielded from the antitrust laws. The problem with this doesn't, you know, a sports league doesn't make a lot of sense in antitrust laws because on the one hand, they've got to work together. You know,
right.
You can't have a pro football game without some rules and a schedule and all that. They've got to work together.
Each individual team can't accomplish what a league accomplishes.
Exactly right. On the other hand, they do compete for players and they compete for fans. And so it's a little bit of a mixture. And so it's a confusing area of the law.
Well, it's also odd because the lower courts ruled on behalf of the NFL, but both sides asked for the Supreme Court to review this case.
That's why this became sort of a big deal and it's being closely watched, because the NFL could have just sort of said, okay, we won, this case should go away. They said to the Supreme Court, you take this up, because the owners very much want this single entity rule. Because if the court were to say the NFL is a single business and cannot be sued on antitrust grounds, that would allow them in the future to say, well, what if we want a salary cap for all the players or some sort of rules for salaries or limits on salaries for coaches? Now, normally you couldn't do that because it would be businesses conspiring to fix prices. But if they're immune from the antitrust laws, they could go ahead and do that. And so that's why it suddenly became a big focus on this case, because of what the NFL was asking for.
And I know that this wasn't necessarily the day to get a sense of what the justices are thinking, but does this seem like it's going to play out as a business law case or as something where people need some knowledge of sports?
I think what they're going to apply is what some of them have thought is the sort of the rule now, which is the joint venture can do some things together, like in this case, scheduling games. But I think they're inclined to say the NFL can be sued under antitrust laws. They're going to send this back to Chicago, allow this company to go ahead and sue. And I think it's going to maintain the law pretty much the way it is. In other words, the NFL is not going to win what it really sought.
And if American Needle wins this case, not much happens.
Yes, and I also don't think American Needle is going to win. I think they're going to win the right to go back and sue.
Uh-huh.
And I think in the end, they may not be able to convince a judge or jury that there was any anti-competitive violation here.
So you don't think the Supreme Court will end up ruling on the underlying charge from American Needle?
I think what the court, my impression listening to them is they're going to say, no, NFL, you can be sued. We're going to send this case back to Chicago, but we're not convinced that this little company's got a very big case. So it'll be sort of a mixed result.
Now, there is a case where the league acts as one entity with an antitrust exemption, and that is in television broadcast negotiations. Each team doesn't have to negotiate with the networks for their own television broadcast. Is that going to be an important precedent?
I don't think that'll be affected by this, because Congress has sort of signed off on that And so it's not really at issue in this case.
We are also joined here in the studio by Daniel Kaplan. He's the finance editor for the Sports Business Journal. Welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me.
And as we talk about the particulars of this case, of course, then the question comes up, well, why should it matter? You know, the NFL is a very specific thing. You can't imagine that it is applicable, whatever case law is decided here, to a broad variety of things. But what might the applications be? What happens if the NFL is considered one legal entity?
Well, it is hard to make an argument that this is going to affect fans. But to step back for a second, the sports and antitrust has been a thorn in the side of sports leagues for many years, pretty much since baseball got its antitrust exemption from the Supreme Court in the early part of the 20th century. The other sports and leagues have wanted it and have not received it. The NFL got it for TV, but they haven't gotten it for other areas. And so all these cases have culminated in this American Needle case, and all the leagues are on one side, the unions and others are on the other side, and there's been a lot of hype about it. But I think from today's arguments, it was pretty clear that it's a very narrow case about a sports licensing business. It's not the be-end and end-all for labor or how the leagues are structured. This is about sports licensing, and I would agree that it probably will be remanded back to the district court where the NFL probably would win.
Well, you wouldn't believe it has no implication on labor from what the unions are saying. And Saints quarterback Drew Brees had an op-ed in the Washington Post this weekend on behalf of the players saying that this was bad for football.
The outside general counsel of the NFL was asked about that on the courthouse steps after the hearing today by a reporter about the effect on labor. And his response is, you've been reading too many papers in Drew Brees. They do not believe this has, or their statement is they do not believe this will have any effect on labor. In their defense, collective bargaining is exempt from antitrust scrutiny. But if the union and management are at loggerheads and there's a lockout by the players and the players decide to decertify their union, then there could be labor implications if they got a broad sweeping antitrust exemption from the Supreme Court.
David Savage.
I was going to say, Rebecca, for your non-sports fans, one of the areas that's sort of lurking in the background is this whole issue of joint ventures. MasterCard and Visa have been sued over this, and it's a sort of a similar question. There's all these banks get together, form MasterCard and Visa. A lot of businesses don't like the rates they set, and so can you sue MasterCard and Visa for setting rate, fixing prices? And so there are some business implications for whatever the Supreme Court says about joint ventures and whether they are or are not shielded from antitrust law. So I do think in the sort of world of business law, this case will have some implications that go beyond sports.
Let's take a call from Thomas in Radford, Virginia. Thomas, welcome to Talk of the Nation.
Thank you.
Welcome to the show. What's on your mind?
I really think that they should be treated as 32 separate businesses for the reason that although there is the unifying name and they all work together, it's a lot like a franchise restaurant where each restaurant, for example, would be independently owned, independently operated, and what each individual restaurant would do as far as hiring and firing and setting prices doesn't affect the other parts, and it's the same way in the NFL. It's the hire or fire some.
Yeah, Thomas, I'm afraid your cell phone line is breaking up, so we're going to let you go. But this touches on the labor question we were just talking about, Daniel Kaplan. Does the prospect of one entity give hiring and firing decisions less leeway?
Well, not if it comes to players, because there's been a lot of hype on the player side, a lot written about it. And what's lost in all that is that it's already exempt from antitrust scrutiny. Where there's been some concern is actually on the head coaches. The Head Coaches Association, actually, because they're not unionized, and they filed an amicus brief on behalf of American Needle at the Supreme Court, and the NFL in a later brief came out and said they would not regulate coaches' pay. So it is of concern, the players and the coaches' issues, but I have a hard time thinking anything the Supreme Court rules this June will have a major impact on players or coaches. I'm expecting a very narrow ruling, if not remanding it back to the district court.
Let's hear from Gary in Ocala, Florida. Gary, welcome to Talk of the Nation.
Yeah, thank you.
Sure.
You know, that gentleman just before, when he mentioned the thing about franchise restaurants, I don't think that holds a lot of water, because he said, because Denny's has been sued as one entity for not pushing people from the back of the room, the back of the restaurant to the front, you know, not promoting them that way. So, I mean, you know, that one does, I don't think that holds a lot of water. And as the NFL is not a single entity, I don't know who is. I mean, perhaps you could make a case for NFC, AFC, all right, two separate units of the NFL. But as a body, the NFL is one body. I don't care if it's 20-some-odd different teams.
Well, Gary, let me play devil's advocate with that, though, because the whole idea that it is one body is because it participates together in one ultimate Super Bowl, in which case the NFC and AFC participate together.
Okay, well, I understand what you're saying, but way, way back when, all those guys got together, all those owners got together and created a league. They created the NFL, and then the AFC came along, the American AFL came along, right? And then they swallowed up the AFL, so they had the NFC and the AFC. I'm sure you understand what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, Gary, thank you so much for your call. We are talking about the Supreme Court case where opening arguments were heard today, an NFL antitrust case. We are talking with David Savage. He covers the Supreme Court for the Los Angeles Times and the Chicago Tribune, and Daniel Kaplan, finance editor for the Sports Business Journal. And we're taking your calls, 800-989-8255. You can also send us email. The address is talk@npr.org. I'm Rebecca Roberts. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Rebecca Roberts in Washington. There's an NFL playoff going on, and it's not on the field. It's at the Supreme Court. Well, there's one going on the field, too. Today, the court heard arguments about a lawsuit brought by American Needle against the National Football League. The merchandise company is suing the NFL for possible violation of antitrust laws, coming down to whether or not the NFL is one entity or 32 separate businesses. We're talking with David Savage. He covers the Supreme Court for the Los Angeles Times and Chicago Tribune, and also Daniel Kaplan, finance editor for Sports Business Journal. And we want to hear from you. Should the NFL be treated as one company or its teams as 32 separate businesses? Give us a call. Our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. Our email address is talk@npr.org, and you can join the conversation at our website. Go to npr.org and click on Talk of the Nation. Let's hear from Kim in Redding, California. Kim, welcome to Talk of the Nation.
Hi, thank you for accepting my call.
Sure.
I guess the anger with me at this point is that I doubt if the Supreme Court is gonna help, and they probably will throw it back. And I think it probably will be considered a single entity. But I guess I'm so angry at the little guy always getting it in the long run, and for the NFL to determine that they're going to give the sales to Reebok and raise the price from $19 to $30 is just, once again, the little people are getting, you know, are getting it in the long run again. And I think, you know, it might come down to, since we cannot depend on the Supreme Court to help us, that we're going to have to help ourselves and maybe not buy the product until they lower it back down to a reasonable price, you know. And I guess I'm just so frustrated nowadays. You're seeing more and more how the rich are getting richer off of stuff, off the backs of us little people, and it just angers me, I think.
Kim, thank you for your call. She's referring to $20 and $30 in American Needle suit. They quoted a Reebok executive saying a fitted hat that used to sell for $19.99 is now retailing for $30, and this has been a windfall for Reebok. We haven't talked much about American Needle and who they are and what their prospects are for this. Reebok obviously is a well-known brand. What do you know about American Needle, David Savage?
Well, they're in Buffalo Grove outside of Chicago. They made sports apparel for a long time. They're a family-run company. They do say that they could charge lower prices, and they do feel like they're frozen out because of a big company. I was struck by her comment that what she was describing was the old view of antitrust law in the 50s and 60s. There was a time when the Supreme Court really saw antitrust law as about protecting the little guys from the big guys. You know, remember, it started 100 years ago, big corporate trusts, and the idea was we want to protect the little guys. And the Supreme Court, up through the 60s and 70s, sort of had that view that you could count on them to say these antitrust laws are about protecting little guys. That whole notion has sort of gone away, and they're much more inclined to say, be sort of sympathetic to big business, to saying big business can do things efficiently, and we're not going to insist on sort of special rules to protect the little competitors. So this is a case that sort of fits that mold. It's a little competitor that's being sort of shut out by a bigger company and trying to get the Supreme Court on their side. And as I say, I think they may win. American Needle may win a chance to go back to Chicago and make their case. So they may win at the Supreme Court level.
We have an email from Gary in Kansas City, Missouri, who says, I would be afraid that if the NFL were considered to be 32 separate businesses, it could not continue to implement its current revenue sharing and salary cap agreements, which levels the playing field for small market teams. If the NFL were to be considered as 32 separate units, then the result would be that the small market teams would eventually not be able to compete on a level playing field, and it would become just like baseball in the USA or soccer in Britain, Spain, Italy, and Germany. This would result that a very few teams would have disproportionate number of the best players and titles. Who wants the Bears, Giants, and Jets to be Super Bowl champs a collective 50% of the time? Daniel Kaplan?
Well, this is the big issue. What are the areas that the league can cooperate in? At the Supreme Court today, there was a lot of debate about whether selling T-shirts and hats promoted the game of football. The NFL argues that selling T-shirts and hats is not just about making money, it's about promoting the game, and that's intrinsic to making the game go on, and that as a joint venture that's in the business of staging football games, that is protected from antitrust scrutiny. So if you start getting into these areas and say they can't do this and they can't do that, where does it stop? That's the NFL's argument. I think Justice Alito said, you know, where does it stop? If you have you decide you're going to go from 16 to 14 games, classic core rules making that is you'd think would be protected for sports bodies. You could have a few teams say, no, we don't want to go to 14 games. We want to stay at 16 games. We're going to sue under antitrust. So from the NFL side, they're saying, where does it stop? What can we do? Aren't we a joint venture? Shouldn't we be allowed to sell T-shirts and sell hats if our joint venture members want to do that? And that's why I think, you know, it will go back to the district court and that will be the ultimate ruling. They are allowed to do it.
Explain for us why baseball is different. Why, for instance, can the Yankees go out and buy themselves a championship team?
Well, I mean, this is actually different from the antitrust question, but baseball does not have a salary cap, so the Yankees can spend as much as they wish, and baseball also does not have as much revenue sharing as the NFL. The NFL shares about 75 to 80% of all the revenues that come into the NFL, much of that being the TV money. So those are the two principal reasons.
So if the argument, of course, is that, you know, a market like New York earns a lot more revenue on its television than a market like Green Bay. And without revenue sharing, you'd have this disproportionate wealth among the teams. So if they are 32 separate businesses, that sounds like it would have implications for revenue sharing.
It would certainly. The Reebok contract, for example, the proceeds from that is pooled among the 32 teams. It doesn't matter how many New York Giants hats are sold to the Giants' bottom line. That still gets pooled among the 32 teams. If you take this away, that they can't pool, you know, collectively sell these 32 team rights, well, then the Giants are going to get richer, the Dallas Cowboys are going to get richer, and the Jacksonville Jaguars of the world are just going to get poorer.
Let's take a call from Mike in Syracuse. Mike, welcome to Talk the Nation.
Rebecca, thanks for getting me on.
Sure.
I find this discussion interesting because I had thought that this was an issue that was already settled. Back in the early 80s when Al Davis wanted to move the then Oakland Raiders to Los Angeles, the rest of the owners tried to stop him, and they said they had the right because at that time they were saying that they were one business. He took them to court, And his claim was that, no, we are 32 separate businesses, and he won. And then he moved the Raiders to Los Angeles for a few years and then back to Oakland. But so I thought that was already a settled issue, so I'm a little perplexed about why it still seems to be an issue.
Daniel Kaplan?
Well, certainly an owner has a, because of Al Davis, has a much more leeway now to move an NFL franchise, although it's still deeply frowned upon.
But as is Al Davis.
As is Al Davis, most certainly within NFL circles. That said, this is an entirely different question. This is about not just the right of one team to do what it wants, but the right of all 32 teams to act together. And that's the question the Supreme Court was dealing with today. Could the NFL in 2000, 2001 say to American Needle and the other hat manufacturers, pretty much go take a hike, we're going to take all 32 teams and put them into one pot? And that's what's before the Supreme Court today.
David Savage.
Well, plus nothing is necessarily settled forever. That was 25 years ago. You've got sort of a new Supreme Court. They're much more skeptical of antitrust law than they used to be. They've had a series of decisions over the last 4 or 5 years to cut back on the antitrust laws. They don't like a lot of these big lawsuits. So I think it was reasonable for the NFL lawyers to try again. You know, we may have lost on the single entity theory in the early 1980s. Maybe they'll buy it now. I think that was the thinking.
And the law at stake is Title I of the Sherman Act. How well tested has that been? Is that something that has been coming under scrutiny lately?
Well, just as I said, that they've been, you know, it goes back to 1890. It's always been a little unclear what the Sherman Act meant. It was one of the big fights of the early 20th century about breaking up trusts. The general rule has been that sort of, you know, any conspiracy to restrain trade is an antitrust violation. The Supreme Court's had to put meat on the bones of that over the years. But they have, as I say, at the last 10 to 15 years, increasingly skeptical of allowing antitrust suits to go forward. So that's the backdrop of this case, that the court is constantly sort of paring back what can go forward as an antitrust claim.
Let's hear from Michael in Milwaukee. Michael, welcome to Talk the Nation.
Hi. Thank you for having me on.
Sure.
I was just wondering how consumers would, how a Supreme Court ruling either way on this issue of would affect consumers as far as prices of tickets and prices of merchandise, et cetera, et cetera.
Thanks for your question. Daniel Kaplan?
Well, American Needle and several of their briefs argued that a sweeping decision for the NFL, if they were declared a single entity, that they could fix ticket prices. This was one of the allegations American Needle makes. The NFL's response is they have no intention of fixing ticket prices, and it's ridiculous to think you could set ticket prices at the same level in say, Green Bay and Jacksonville as you could in New York and Dallas. But this is one of the concerns with giving the NFL too much power too much exclusion from antitrust scrutiny, is that it could seep into areas like ticket prices and labor.
And how much is the, I know it's sort of hard to tell now because the case has just begun, but the warnings about ticket prices or about player salaries and lockouts and all of that, how much of that is attention-grabbing, trying to gin up some interest in this case, and how much of that do you really expect to hear argued in front of the court?
Well, I think most of it is attention-grabbing. I mean, the case was argued today, and labor actually didn't come up at all. It doesn't mean that the justices aren't aware of it, that they won't consider it, but it did not come up at all. I thought it was fairly narrowly focused on the issue of this licensing contract. The furthest afield I saw the discussion go was when I think it was Justice Scalia asked the outside counsel for the NFL, Greg Levy from Covington and Burling, could the NFL set prices for franchises, the value of the franchise? And he surprisingly said yes. Yes, they could. And Scalia replied, wow.
On the other hand, presumably the NFL would not have asked to review a victory if they didn't want a broader reaching decision.
Yes. They said in their petition to the court is that they should be a single entity for core business ventures. And then they had some language as to what core business ventures are, and they mentioned players and salaries. And so that raised a sort of red flag among the players' groups, is that that's where the NFL really wanted to go. And so that's, to some degree, that this case has been hyped, but it was, to some degree, I think, hyped by the NFL lawyers in that brief.
That is David Savage. He covers the Supreme Court for the Los Angeles Times and the Chicago Tribune. We're also joined here in the studio by Daniel Kaplan, finance editor for Sports Business Journal. We're talking about the antitrust case in front of the Supreme Court American Needle has brought against the NFL. And you can join us with your opinions or questions. 800-989-8255 is our phone number. Our email address is talk@npr.org. You can also join the conversation online. Go to npr.org and click on Talk of the Nation. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's take a call from Todd in Jacksonville, Florida. Todd, welcome to Talk of the Nation.
Hi, thanks.
Sure.
My question was, how is this arrangement that the NFL has with Reebok different than a sponsorship you'd see advertised on TV for Pepsi or Coke or Budweiser, and how does that relate to what you would get in the stadium when you go to the concession stand or the merchandise stand?
Daniel Kaplan.
Everyone's looking at me. the Reebok contract is an exclusive contract. The 32 NFL teams cannot sign an apparel contract, a hat contract with anyone else. Whereas while there's a league-wide sponsorship, for example, with some of the companies you mentioned, the teams on an individual basis can go out and sign competing contracts. So that's why you see Coors is the league-wide sponsor, but Budweiser and Heineken and all these other beer companies have deals with individual teams. The American Needles, one of their core contention is their main issue with the Reebok contract is not that it's a collectively pool, but that it's exclusive, that they can't sign a deal with any NFL team.
Yeah, I noticed here in Washington that Harris Teeter grocery stores have signs up saying we're the official grocery store of the Washington Redskins, not the league.
Not the league, that's right.
But let's take another call. This is Phil in Grenville, Texas. Phil, welcome to Talk the Nation.
Thank you for having me on. I have one comment in the merchandising issue. Is any of the teams allowed to control any of their own merchandising? Because if they are, then that would make them a single entity. If they are,
what do you mean by merchandising, Phil?
Well, if they're allowed to sell their own hats, their own T-shirts, and rake in the benefits, for example, say at the stadium. I go to a Cowboy game and buy a jersey from the Cowboys at the stadium. Do they own those jerseys? Are they the ones that control that, or does that come through the NFL? Now, if it's all through the NFL, if they assign all of their rights to merchandising when they sign on as an NFL team to fall under that umbrella, if they sign on all of their rights to the NFL, then that would make it fall under one umbrella.
Well, there's really, Dan Kaplan here, there's two different issues you're addressing. One is who actually manufactures the apparel, whose logo is on it, and who's arranging the selling. The league arranges the selling for 31 of the 32 teams. The Dallas Cowboys have opted out, and they arrange all the sales of the Reebok gear by themselves. Jerry Jones, the owner of the Cowboys, is famous for saying he doesn't want New York to tell him how to run his business. But it's Reebok gear. Some of the teams do have team stores at the stadium and perhaps in their local cities. But by and large, most of the sales that you'll see through major malls, retailers of that nature, that's driven by the league. The league is arranging those kinds of deals.
So wouldn't it be correct in assuming that if the teams can have their own products and make those available to the public for sale, would that make them a single entity rather than falling under one corporate umbrella?
Is the merchandise available at a team store? It's who's making the merchandise, and that's really the issue. And what American Needle is arguing is the NFL does not have the right to tell the 32 teams that they can't go into business with anyone other than Reebok. That Reebok has to be the manufacturer of these baseball caps, and how the teams then distribute these caps, or if the league distributes those caps, I think that's a slightly different question.
We're almost out of time, but just quickly, what is your best prediction of what happens with this case?
Well, I agree with David that this is that the justices seem somewhat uncomfortable with both sides of this argument. I don't think they want to come in with a sweeping decision either way. It will be remanded back to the district court for more discovery on whether this is indeed an antitrust violation.
And what happens there, David Savage, at the district level?
There's a trial on whether this deal is hurts consumers and anti-competitive, so it'll be decided a couple years down the road.
That's David Savage, covers the Supreme Court for the Los Angeles Times and Chicago Tribune, and Daniel Kaplan, staff writer for Sports Business Journal. Thank you both so much.
Thank you.
Coming up, Michelle Singletary on a financial fast. That's next. I'm Rebecca Roberts. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News.